Welcome to another episode of Comedy Wham Presents with me, your host, Valerie, and sometime co-host, Miss Purrington, but she's back at home. We are on location, and there's another cat on the premises. We'll see if he shows up. ComedyWham.com is your place to go for features about all Austin comedy. We bring you articles and podcasts featuring the best in Austin comedy in all its shapes and formats. Launched in 2016, the podcast project brings you funny people and their stories. As a fan, I like to delve into a comic's background and motivations, and usually take a detour along the way. Consider the interview a way for you to get to know the folks that make the Austin comedy scene one of the best in the country. Today, I sit down with somebody that I first started noticing about 2 years ago, I'd say, and now, because this is how I keep up with comics these days, when I stalk her on Facebook, she's getting on every showcase imaginable. And this is actually a rescheduled interview. And at the time, she had just picked up her first hosting gig for Jeff Dye at Cap City. So things are going really, really well for her. She's funny. She's personable. And I think this is a first for me personally as an interviewer. I consider her to be a fashion icon in the comedy scene. I don't tend to make comments about people's looks or how they dress, but this guest, to me is a fashion icon. So please now, Comedy Wham presents Ashley Overton.
Hello.
Hello. Welcome.
Thank you for having me, and thank you for the compliment.
You're welcome. How do you feel about that? Do people make comments about the way you dress?
Yes. I think it's because I don't have any rules to how I dress, and I dress the way I want to dress. Like, and there's no, you know, sometimes my outfit looks a little more, let's say, masculine, right? Mm-hmm. And then sometimes I kind of, you know, press up and, you know, wear something fancy and cute and girly. And I think that's why people kind of notice, just because I don't have any kind of rules.
That is a good way. I mean, that's a great self-awareness, because I completely agree with your capture of it. It's not that, you know, you always wear the same style of outfit. It's just every time you put a combination of things that I could never put off and that most people could never put off, you must just have a natural eye and a gift for how to put things together.
I have to give a shout out to my Nana Fran. She was always very much like that. She was a person who was like, you have to always dress up no matter where you're going. Or you always have to look good, because you never know who you're going to run into. That was there. And, you know, she was in politics, like city politics, in Irving. And so I think because I always heard that when I was younger, I was like, oh, I'm going to look at least as good as I can. You know, like, there's only so much we can all do, but I mean, at least, like, it was fun, because there was a comic one time who said, you dress like your own superhero. And I really loved when she said that, because I do, like, each outfit kind of gives me some bravado or confidence or maybe something I'm missing that day, whatever it is, a happiness. Like, if it's a day that it's a crappy day and I'm kind of sad, I'll put on something, you know, colorful and vibrant, that'll just help me kind of get over that. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. I like it. Yeah. I like dressing.
We appreciate that you do. Well, I deviated a little bit from my standard, because I am so intrigued by the fashion, but let's move on to comedy. Mm-hmm. And I start these always with an icebreaker.
Okay.
One word to describe your past.
Oh boy. Well, let's get into it. One word to describe my past. I would say, this is really sad, but I would say alone. Yeah, I just feel like when I was younger, even though I definitely had a wonderful family, both parents very supportive, I think that the truth was that my dad was very focused on my older brother, because he had a lot of, like, sports talents. He was very gifted. And I think my dad, because he was never gifted in sports, kind of lived through that. And so he put a lot of focus on my brother, while my mom was working, you know, 50 to 60 hour weeks being a paralegal. And so, you know, I'm sure she wanted to be there for a lot of things and be home when she said she was going to be home. But, you know, she's got to provide or help provide. So I would say alone, just because I was the kid who always came up with I would do weird stuff to entertain myself, like play with my parents. What are they called? Like toiletries, like their little mini bottles of shampoo, or my mom's lotion would be married to my dad's lotion. Like I would play with them like they were people. Very strange. My parents should have taken me to a psychiatrist. That was a red flag. But yeah, like I was just the kid who always had to come up with ways to like entertain myself because everyone else was busy or not there. Yeah. So that's kind of the word I think I would describe.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Grapevine, Texas.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So DFW.
Yeah, I'm Burleson.
Mm-hmm. Right there in the, I always tell people Grapevine is right there in the middle because it takes 30 minutes to get to Dallas and 30 minutes to get to Fort Worth. So
yeah.
It was a cool place. There's restaurants everywhere. So I was a fan.
Yeah. Restaurants are a good thing to have.
Yes.
Yeah. Did you have any comedic influences or memories? I like to ask, and it's not necessarily a performance or, but maybe it's something random in your family or what you watched. Do you have an early comedic memory?
Yes. One sticks out in my family's really funny. Like all of them are funny in different ways. I think it's because they're all lunatics, but, and that's what helps make them funny, but, there's this one specific memory when – so me and my brother would go see my aunt every summer. We would stay with her for a week because she lives in Houston.
Okay.
At the time, she lived in Clear Lake, which was a little bit closer to like if we wanted to go to Galveston. Mm-hmm. You know, it was a little bit closer than where she lives now in Houston. But so we would stay there a week. And I remember one time we went there one summer and – me and my brother were kind of getting to that age where like my aunt was like, oh, we can teach them something. She's just very much like that. She's like, cause she didn't have kids at the time. So she was like, I want to be a mom too, you know? And, so we were a little bit older and she wanted to teach us etiquette. So she made this like delicious steak dinner one night. We sat at the formal dining table in her house. She set everything up. We used the nice china. Like she was really putting us in like a real life situation. Like, I don't know. You guys could eat with the prince. I want you guys to be prepared. Like it was very fancy. And so she was like, okay, well, if we're going to practice etiquette and we're going to have this fancy dinner, you guys got to dress up. So my brother had to like, you know, wear a coat and button up, and I didn't have anything. I was a tomboy when I was younger, so I didn't have any dresses. I didn't have anything nice. I had shirts that had blood stains on them because I skinned my knees a lot from climbing and running around with boys. So, she was like, okay, well, I'll just let you borrow my dress. And so she puts me in her dress, like one of her dresses that she had. And I think at the time I was, maybe like, 10 or 11. Mm-hmm. So I'm putting on this dress. It is obviously for a woman. I am a girl. So I remember as a kid, I was like, the first thing I noticed was the space in between the breast part. Cause there was just, I mean, I kept, when I was a kid, I just kept pushing it. I was just like, this feels wrong. This feels wrong. And so what I ended up doing, and my aunt didn't know this, she was still in the other room. I, you know, did that, great old bit where I stuffed my bra, like with, I mean, just comical amounts of paper and toilet paper, like to where when I came out, it didn't even, I mean, it was, I had D's, like it was just full of toilet paper. I think my aunt ran out of toilet paper like that night because it was like, well, I'm sorry. You put me in this dress. It was needed. I need to grow breast fast. But yeah, it was, I think that moment was like, it was funny. It made my aunt laugh. It made my uncle laugh. You know, it was just that moment where I was just like, oh, like this is how I think. This is like the way I process things or, you know, so.
I have to ask, and I don't know if you can 100% put you back in that moment, because I have an 11-year-old. Mm-hmm. No, wait, I have a 12-year-old. But so I'm very, you know, familiar with that mind, that brain. And I'm wondering, did you do it to be funny, or did you do it because you thought, oh, this is a practical solution to this problem that I seem to have?
I think it was both. Because if it would have been just the practical, right, I would have first made the boobs symmetrical and even. But I did not do that. It was like, I mean, that's where the comedy came into. Uh-huh. It was like, this was really big, and over here was, I mean, I enjoyed the absurdity,
yeah.
I think is the, I've always, I don't know, I think in that moment, that's when I learned, like, I enjoy making people laugh.
Yeah.
I didn't know what that meant back then,
sure.
You know, and I still don't. People who claim that they do, I mean, come on. Like,
yeah.
Only a few of us get lucky with this, and the rest of us just keep doing it because we love it.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It was, I mean, it's a fun memory.
Yeah. Did you do any performance in school?
I did, yes. Well, more so, I did acting.
Okay.
A lot when I was a child. Like, I was a part of a local theater group or whatever. So it was like a little dingy theater that was in a shopping center. And, we would have classes, and then we would perform, you know, like mm-hmm. a few scenes from, I don't know, like a play or whatever. And, my acting teacher, you know, said I was a natural, but I'm sure she said that to all the parents. Your kid's a natural. Okay, $350 is how much this class costs. But like, I remember there was a period of time where I thought, like, okay, this is what I want to do. Like, I want to be an actress. And, I think I was like 9 or 10. I got the lead in a Christmas church play over Demi Lovato. So, yeah,
what?
That's why
I
peaked. It's all downhill from here. Yeah, exactly. Cause look where you're in the world around, you know? If I wouldn't have gotten the lead, I'd probably be, you know, in a mansion having a bunch of drug problems like I always wanted. But instead, you know, but no, I just, it was, yeah, I got the lead over her. That was pretty cool. I mean, it's cool now. It's not like back then I was like, I got the lead over someone who's going to be better at this than me, you know. But, yeah, I did a lot of performance like that, like more like stage plays and mm-hmm. things like that. So, you know, it was always fun. I've always loved being in front of people,
mm-hmm.
which is weird because I'm kind of a little bit of a half introvert, half extrovert. So there's moments when I'm like, I need to shine. And there's moments when I'm like, please don't look at me. Like,
yeah.
I just need to hide for a second.
I will share an observation, and I'm sure you have much closer and dearer friends that, you know, validate you. You don't need me validating you. But it is interesting, as I've watched you over the last couple of years, that I see that. Like, on stage, it's mm-hmm. absolute the extrovert. You want, you know, you bask in that attention.
Mm-hmm.
But you have fun. You don't seem needy mm-hmm. on stage. But when I see sometimes you walk into a club, and I can kind of see that tentativeness of, oh, I need somebody to kind of protect me.
Yeah.
And it's not protection. It's just you do give off some of that introvert vibe.
Mm-hmm.
And I can relate. I'm an introvert as well. So I have a sensibility of what an introvert goes through.
Mm-hmm.
I see that. And yet this is such a weird profession or pursuit that we have
mm-hmm.
where you're expected to be an extrovert
right
on stage, and people that don't know any better expect you to be that way off stage too.
That's true. Yeah. I mean, I think it's so funny because I think I'm that way specifically when I walk into a room full of comedians. I don't know why. I guess I feel like I have to be a little more on guard a little bit because we're all doing the same thing. Essentially,
yeah.
We're trying to make people laugh. And at the end, there's always a winner and lots of losers. sometimes it feels that way, right?
Yeah.
But it's weird. I feel The most comfortable I feel is actually when I'm in a room full of strangers who are not comedians, because I feel like in that situation, and it's not even that I'm trying to do a bit every 5 minutes mm-hmm. or whatever. It's just that's how I naturally communicate to strangers. Like, it's almost like a, hey, if I just, you know, be goofy and funny, then I don't have to worry about all the other stuff, yeah. like whether or not they think I'm pretty or they mm-hmm. think I, you know what I mean? Like, it's yeah. just, I can just give them a lot of funny and then the rest doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And it's where I'm the most comfortable. Like, mm-hmm. and there's no, like, oh, well, you think this is funny because, you know, he owns that club and I want him to book me. And, you know, it's, there's yeah. none of that.
Right. Right.
It's just, these are people just like you, except they have normal jobs and normal lives. And I don't know. I just, I feel more at home with those people yeah. only because they, there's no, weird barter, right? Or yeah. some sort of weird, you know.
Yeah.
Hey, some if I do.
Politicking.
Right, right, right. Yeah. If I do this for you, can you put me on that show? Mm-hmm. That's how I talk to people when I ask them if I can be on their show. Can you put me on that show? Anyway, that's why I'm. January is looking empty, so.
Oh. When was the first time you stepped on stage to do comedy?
Specifically stand up.
Mm-hmm.
It was, I was 19, maybe 18. And it was at a pizza spot in Colleyville, Texas. And it was really more of like a, one of those like variety open mics. So it wasn't specifically comedy.
Yeah.
So there'd be music. There'd be some girl who wrote poetry about her ex-boyfriend. That was probably my favorite. you know, just like a mixture of things. And so I went up there. And even back then, I don't think I took it seriously as like something like, oh, this is it. This is what I want to do. You know, uh-huh. I think I just did it because I was like, oh, I know all my friends are going to be at this place. And I think it would be funny to try to make them laugh.
Yeah.
And so I get up on stage. It was so awful, so bad. I talked about toilet paper for 5 minutes.
This is a recurring theme here about toilet paper.
I do. It's just. Toilet paper started my career. It did, which makes a lot of sense because I feel like comedy is shit. But I just talked about toilet paper for 5 minutes. That's all I had. So I got the light at 4 and I was like, I still have more to say about toilet paper. And it was so bad. But I mean, I'll always remember that, you know, it's just like I remember a guy sitting on the bar who was not one of my friends, just like a random. Uh-huh. And he audibly said, "Where is this going?" And I was like, I don't know, dude. I barely wrote this out. I just know how I feel about toilet paper, and I'm going with that. It was awful. Anyway.
Oh, my gosh.
Book me today.
Well, your work now covers much more than just toilet paper.
I've thought about bringing it back, boy. Though. I feel like people don't talk about toilet paper enough.
So you were still in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, and
yes,
how did you feel after you got off that stage? Other than it's awful,
right? Right.
Because now you have the prism of, you know, the hindsight, and you're like, that was really a bad thing. But at the time, were you excited? Did you make your friends laugh?
No.
Okay.
I did not. Yeah, I don't. I don't know how I felt. I think I was just kind of like, well, that was a fun thing I tried.
Mm-hmm.
Now I got to try to get into UT. Because, like, at that time, I was trying to transfer into UT okay. from a community college. So I think I was just like, again, I don't even think I registered that that was a possibility or could be a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, in fact, I didn't even think about stand-up comedy or that kind of – now, I should say in between all of this time, I'm still yuck-yucking – with people like at parties and things mm-hmm. like that, even when I wasn't doing, like, it's always been there.
Yeah,
like the
yeah.
sense of like relief when I am talking to a person and they laugh. I mean, that's always been there. But then I didn't even think about stand-up comedy until, I think I had graduated from UT. So it must have been something like 2013. And, I went to Kick Butt Coffee, actually. Oh, the first place.
How funny.
Yeah. And now I host it.
Yeah.
So karma is a bitch. I'm being punished. No, it's great. But yeah, I tried it there for the first time again because my friend Alexa thought she wanted to get into stand-up comedy. And I was like, okay, well, I'll go with you, like, to support her. I wasn't even thinking about going up, but the night we went up was the Wednesday before Thanksgiving.
Oh.
And there was nobody on the list, like maybe four people ahead of Alexa and then nobody under Alexa. There was a guest host, so it wasn't even the normal host. And I think there was a guy in the back drinking coffee and, you know, thinking about the next place he was going to sleep because he was homeless. So, like, I just looked at my friend Alexa. She was like, I don't know if I want to do this. And so then I signed up to kind of be like, look, I know there's not much here. I know there's not much of a crowd, but, like, I'll do it with you. We'll do it, you know, rip the Band-Aid.
Yeah.
So to speak. And so that was the second time. And you know, I couldn't even tell you how I did because, like I said, the homeless guy had left and there was nobody left but the host. And, yeah, so I don't know. I just, and then from there, I was just like, I guess I'll keep trying this. So I always kind of had my toe in the water.
Yeah.
So I was kind of like doing it only at Kick Butt and every now and then. It wasn't even consistent yet until my friend Luke was like, look, you need to do FPIA. And I was like, what? Luke, I barely have jokes. Like, what do you mean? Do this contest that everyone freaks out about.
Right.
And he's like, yeah, I know you don't have jokes. Listen.
But do this contest.
But do this contest.
Wow.
Because I need less. I need less competitors.
Ah, okay.
Do the contest. Exactly. He's like telling all the bad comics, like, come do this contest. You're going to win the $3,000. I promise you. You're fucking hilarious. But yeah, like he told me to do the contest, and I asked him why. I was like, this is ridiculous. And he's like, well, you got to do it because I think once you do it, I mean, it doesn't matter how good or bad you do. I think that's going to tell you if you really want to stick to this. Mm. And then I did it. Ooh, I bombed so hard. But as soon as I got off stage, I was like, I can be better than this. And then here we are.
Yeah.
Almost 5 years later. Sticking to it.
I want to dig into the first time you did that Kick Butt because you had all of the worst of the environment to perform in, but you decided you were going to keep doing it. So do you have any idea why, with the lack of audience, the lack of a reaction, the completely, you know,
void of laughter,
the void, why did you go back?
Narcissism, actually. Mental disorder. You know, there's like a long list. I don't know. I just, in a weird way, I think I realized, and I think a lot of fear comes from this thought too, because you never know what's going to happen in life, and there's no guarantees.
Yeah.
I mean, I know people say, like, if you work really hard, it'll pay off. I mean, sometimes, but then sometimes you're just at, like, it's just average. Like, you're just going to be, and that's okay. And you gotta, you know, but I think going back to that question, I think the reason why I keep doing it, even regardless of the fact that I'm not getting standing ovations every night and roaring laughter is because I can't imagine myself doing anything else, which is cliche, but it's true. Yeah. I mean, you talk to a doctor, he's going to say the same freaking thing. Like, I couldn't see myself doing anything else. Preacher, I thought of doing other things, but, you know, no one will have sex with me. So I decided to become a pastor anyway. But like, yeah, that's, I don't know. It's just, I think that's gotta be your answer, you know, otherwise you wouldn't keep doing it,
right.
You know, cause this is awful. I mean, it's terrible. More times than not, it's terrible than it is great, you know, but the great moments are so good that you hold on to them.
Right.
Through a lot more awful moments.
Do you remember your first great moment?
Let's see. Still waiting for that one. No, I think.
Great-ish
moment? Yeah. I think it was probably – I think it was the first time I realized I wrote a joke that actually had a punchline.
Hmm.
And I told it, And I got one comic that I had noticed is I could tell more of a veteran of the scene mm-hmm. to laugh. Then I realized, oh, I finally figured out the formula. Yeah. You know, like
yeah.
the setup, the punchline. I figured it out.
Yeah.
Because at that time I was like struggling really hard with either trying to make whatever story I was telling funny or like I said, writing a clear setup punchline joke. And then I think when I wrote that and got that laugh, I was like, wow. And it wasn't even, I mean, he was the only one who laughed, but that was still in a weird yeah. way validating for me,
yeah.
you know? So, and the joke was, and I do not tell this anymore because I feel like when you make a joke like this, it's very much like a, you're fresh comic kind of joke mm. to write, mm-hmm. but it was, what was it? That's the only reason I'm telling it because I don't tell this joke anymore. It was, you know, I have a hard time remembering when to take my birth control. So I take it every day at 9/11. Uh-huh. So you never forget. I mean, very, just like the perfect joke to write when you're first starting yeah. out and never tell it again. But it's like that first one that like shows that you have enough potential mm-hmm. to do this, like and really write out what it yeah. is you're trying to convey. So I think that was like a weird shining moment mm-hmm. for me.
Yeah. Just so I have some context, what is your degree in?
Oh, political communication.
Okay.
So how to talk politically to the politicians about politics. That's the definition. Mm-hmm. No.
Makes sense.
I think at UT they don't have a pre-law, so essentially a lot of people who either major in government or major in political communication end up going to law school, okay. which was the plan. And then I started working for a law firm and I was like, I don't want to do this. I don't want to stress out about billing 8 hours. Not for me.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So that the communication, you kind of straddle two worlds.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the communication at a, you know, I'll say highbrow mm-hmm. level, very strategic level. In politics.
Right.
And then in the evenings, you're communicating to a lowbrow audience. Not, I mean, I'm saying that just to do the contrast. Not all audiences.
I don't know what you mean, Valerie. I'm very smart. My jokes are so intelligent.
But they actually are. I don't know. Maybe I put this filter on, but sometimes I can tell when somebody probably has a scholarly background
mm-hmm.
because their jokes come out just a little, oh, I'm going to put, the foot is going in the mouth, and I apologize to every person I've ever, you know, insulted, now, past, future. They're smarter jokes. Mm-hmm. And sometimes when I sit down with somebody and I find out that they have like a scholarly background
mm-hmm.
or they've gone to school for something that's like, oh, you know, you've got an engineering background. I can kind of pick up on that
mm-hmm.
in the way you write your jokes versus somebody who's like, you know, I've always wanted to do comedy and they just have a gift for storytelling.
Right.
That's very just innate.
Right.
Versus.
Which is equally as funny and important,
right,
you
right,
know?
Right.
In fact, I marvel at storytellers. I think yeah. a comic who's a storyteller but can be funny consistently throughout mm-hmm. the story that they're telling.
Right.
I mean, wow, that's like a huge, I don't have that gift, yeah. you know, because I get very distracted in the middle of the story. I'm forgetting that I'm even supposed to be funny and I'm just telling you the story.
Yeah.
Like it's like, so whenever I see a storytelling comic, I'm like, mm-hmm. yeah, that's a talent that
yeah.
a lot of people don't have, you know?
Yeah. yeah.
So I don't know. But yeah, I don't, you're giving me way too much credit, scholarly. I mean, I went to, listeners, I went to community college first before I went to UT.
Are you kidding me? I think that's the smartest move.
It
you're
was.
You're not saddled with a ton of debt that way.
I mean, right. Only half the debt.
Right.
Only half, because I only went to UT for 2 years. You know, my mother, every time I see her, she's like, I'm still paying off those credit cards, or I put all your books on it. And I was like, I don't know what you want from me. Like, you want a check that I can't, you can't cash? I don't know why you keep telling me this.
I only get paid in drink tickets.
Yeah.
Leave me alone.
I'm like, you wanted me to go to college. Here I am. I went to college. Now look at me. Just in debt, just crying all the time.
Oh, the comic's dream.
Yes. I mean, I didn't know life was going to be like this, yeah. You know? It's crazy. It's just, but I mean, I love it.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
I thrive in being busy and feeling like I can't afford anything. Those are my two favorite things, mm-hmm. You know? So, but yeah, I don't know. Anyway, we veered off. Where did we start?
That's why I put that in the intro, is that there will be detours along the way. That's, mm-hmm. That's, you know, the Comedy Wham guarantee. So going back to comedy, like I said, I've started observing you. And I think the first time that I saw you was at the, you know, RIP, I still miss it, the Damn Dirty Filthy Show. I think that's the first time I saw you perform.
At the open mic afterwards or on the show?
No, on the show.
Oh, that was a fun night. And here, I loved that night because Harper Lee had just died. Mm-hmm. Like, just died that week. And I opened up with, so we're all here for the same reason, right? The roast of Harper Lee. And the crowd loved it. And I did not expect them to, because I thought we'd all forgotten who she was. And I don't know, it was just like, I didn't even have anything more to say after that. It was just a funny way to be like, bring in a current event, but make it really awful. Yeah. I don't know. That was a fun night. And that was the first time I had been on that show, and I was really proud that I had finally gotten on that show. Yeah. 'Cause that show used to be like the one people wanted to get on, you know? It was like a popular one.
Yeah. R.I.P. Damn Dirty Filthy Show.
I know. But both of those people who used to run it are on to better things.
Yeah. Yep. Trying to think. I know it was Martin. Who was he? Was I forgot the pairing. Was it Martin and Elizabeth, or was it was Martin?
Martin and Abby.
Yeah.
And then it was Elizabeth and.
Oh God.
Who's the other person who took that over? Cody.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because that was my first introduction to Cody.
Yes.
Well, do that.
I forgot.
Oh,
our moment.
The history lesson of a showcase that doesn't exist anymore. So anyway, so that's when I first saw you.
Mm-hmm.
And over the time, like I see you getting booked on more and more things. And I wouldn't say that when I first saw you, I thought you were rough around the edges at all. You've always been polished to me. And yet I see continual improvements. And, you know, that's paying off and getting picked up for more and more shows.
Mm-hmm. I think it's just because we're running out of women in the scene.
Should we dig into that?
Yeah. They're just like, they keep moving. So who's next on the list? Oh, Ashley, let's book her. Is she funny? She'll pass. Yeah. She'll work.
Well, I know for a fact that that's not the case because I don't get called and I have a pulse. So
no, just wait. We're all moving now.
When are you moving, Ashley? I got my schedule's opening up. No, just kidding.
I'll move just for you.
Oh,
I'll be like,
sweet.
She's next on the list. I'm going to, I don't know, somewhere else that needs comedy really bad. What is the place? Ohio?
Oh, God.
No, I won't.
Yeah.
Too many white people. I already have enough white people in my life.
I think it was this summer, and it was at the Volstead open mic.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember you came in, you did a set, and then you scurried off with a couple of the other comics because you had a show in Bastrop.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm just wondering, like, you probably had no idea that first night at Kick Butt that, you know, your life would revolve around traveling to the metropolis of Bastrop.
The big old city of Bastrop where dreams come true. Over mashed potatoes with gravy.
What?
Wow. I hope no one from Bastrop.
Yeah, right.
I hope that's not insulting, but, you know, I mean, potatoes are good.
I mean, it's just,
you know,
the point being that as comics, you have to do things that are a little wild sometimes. You travel to these far reaches. Mm-hmm. I mean, for Austin, that is far reaches. Traffic is impossible.
Right.
Just to get, you know, some nice stage time.
Right. I think so. But also outside of the stage time, I think it's important to get a read of people from all different parts of, mm-hmm. so it's like in Bastrop, it's going to be a different audience than, I don't know, if you go to Houston.
Yeah.
Like it's just, and that means that you might have to tweak your material a little bit or mm-hmm. know, like look at the audience and be like, okay, I don't think they'll think this is funny, but I think they'll think this is funny. And you yeah. kind of have to like rework it towards them, you mm-hmm. know, where it caters to them. So, and I think that's a good lesson to learn.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think people should, yeah, pass up the opportunity if they ever get asked to do small little towns like that.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Are you the type of person that doesn't say no to things just so you can get that education?
I probably, I've just started saying no recently.
Mm.
And that's only because of my car situation. So it's like, you know, if I can do it, I usually say yes. But like with my car situation, it's like anytime someone from out of town asks me to be on a show, it's like, I want to do it, but are there any other Austin comics on the show? Because I'm going to need a ride. There's mm-hmm. no way I'm going to be able to make it out there
yeah.
without one, you know? And so, I think that's the only reason I've been saying no as of late. It's mm-hmm. just the, you know,
yeah.
kind of wishy-washy, kind of transportation I have right yeah. now.
Does it make you nervous to say no for that reason as opposed to the you're being more protective about the types of things that you'll do?
I think a lot of the shows I've had to say no to recently are not great, mm. so I don't feel too bad.
Yeah.
I probably would if it was like a really good, you know, opportunity and I was just like, I can't, you know. But luckily that hasn't happened. Because usually for those shows that are out of town that are great
mm-hmm.
and I want to do, there's a way to work it, like whether there's another Austin comic going out there or I just take the mega bus, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there's not mega buses that go everywhere. You know, like it's great. Like I can go to Houston because I can get on a mega bus, but mm-hmm. I can't take a mega bus to Bastrop. So, yeah. you know, things yeah. like that.
Do you have a single most valuable thing you've learned? You've already talked about it helps you filter what you say to a different audience. But aside from that, what's the single greatest lesson you've learned from traveling outside of our Austin little community?
That in Austin, probably that in Austin, we are very lucky to have mostly audience that is much more patient mm. than other audiences outside. 'Cause they're not like that in Houston. They're not like that in Dallas. Like they're not as patient or,
what does that look like when you say they're not as patient?
Like they don't even give you, like you'll tell a joke. And I think sometimes when you tell whatever, a certain joke in Austin, they'll laugh or they'll wait a second and then they'll laugh, but you're getting a laugh. Mm-hmm. Whereas in other places, I mean, they don't have, if that joke is not fully formed and polished and makes sense to that crowd, like in places outside of Austin, mm-hmm. I've noticed they don't care. They're not going to laugh. They're mm-hmm. not going to give you any kind of forgiving. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
like, for instance, like in Austin, like if you have a great joke, it's, or maybe it's half done. And let's say you mess up a word, right? And then you kind of mention like, but then you finish the joke and people in Austin will still probably laugh.
Yeah.
Whereas in other parts, they'll be like, that wasn't perfect. Mm-hmm. We're not gonna, you know, so.
So do you buy into the Austin is too soft on its comics or do you like that we're, and it, not necessarily for your own experience, but just as a scene that Austin
is
maybe too soft.
A little bit, yeah. I think so. But also like Austin is a weird city. Because I also think that you have to be careful when you're writing jokes that are, have some sort of political controversy to them or mm-hmm. whatever, because I think this is a crowd that's full of the, what do they call them? I mean, liberals, but the like extreme liberals
yeah.
where they're like, everything is, it has, you have to be sensitive. And,
yeah. The social justice warrior.
Yeah.
Type.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think, I mean, I haven't run into that because I don't really do a lot of political jokes, mm-hmm. but you know, I think it's just, they are soft and they're not, I don't know. It's, yeah. it's hard to describe, but I would say so just compared to, you know, when I went to Dallas and I bombed.
Yeah.
When I went to Houston and I bombed the first show and just did okay the second show. You know, I just, you know, it's,
yeah.
anyway.
Am I misremembering? Cause, you know, I said up front, I've stalked your Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
Did you go out to LA?
I did, yes.
And how was that experience?
It was exhausting. Mm. Both mentally and physically, just because when I was there, I noticed, that there's two different ways to come up in that scene. There's the alt way, mm-hmm. where you're doing more shows, you know, at improv theaters and, you know, like coffee shops and bars, you know, which is very familiar to me because that's Austin.
Yeah.
But then you have the other way of coming up in that scene, which is the club scene.
Mm-hmm.
And they obviously have a lot more comedy clubs. I mean, they have comedy clubs everywhere. It yeah. seems like they had comedy clubs out there that I didn't even know existed until I went out there and I was like, how many comedy clubs are there? And it's just, it's different,
yeah.
you know? And I think it was a lot to just to see like the phrase that people use when they're like, oh, everybody wants to be a comedian, you know?
Mm-hmm.
When I was there, that felt true. Where I was just like, everybody wants to be a comedian.
Yeah.
And you just kind of get that moment where you're like, I'm not fucking special. Why did I have this thought that I could do this or this was meant for me? I mean, look at all these other people who seem to think. It was very, I tried to have the best time I could. And I did. I did have a good time, but in a positive experience.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I just, it kind of, I kind of came back a little bit depressed, a little changed,
yeah.
if you will, just because I was just like, wow, like this is, these are, I don't know what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
This is literally what I thought. I was like, or actually, I came back and I made a joke where I was like, it's New York, like me, like the city. I was like, it's New York.
And have you been to the New York scene? And
no, I need to. So the last time I was in New York, I only did one show while I was out there. I need to make a trip back and really do the scene.
Yeah, yeah.
Because the last time I was there, I was more there for vacation and just hanging out and stuff like that. And so I need to go back solely to do comedy.
Yeah.
Just to see what it's like. So, we'll see.
Yeah.
I gotta figure out. I definitely won't be driving there. So I gotta start saving my money for a plane ticket.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
So that means you've toyed at least and you've thought about the idea of going to one of the two cities.
Right. But I'm in no rush.
Yeah.
Because I don't know. It's never a right time to move.
Yep.
You know? And I've always heard people be like, well, you don't want to move before you're ready. And it's like, yeah, but even when I'm ready, I'm probably not ready.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Nobody's ready.
Yeah.
This is a dumb thing we're doing. Like, it's not, like, I'm not going to be a banker where it's like you have steps and that's how you, or whatever.
Sure.
Like, this is a stupid thing. And I don't know. I just, but I'm not in a rush though, because I do love this city. If I could stay in this city and make a living doing this and doing what I love, I mean, I would stay here.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't move anywhere. But fortunately, it's not the way the cookie crumbles. But it should be. Make Austin the second or third industry. Just start like a little protest. I'm like, come on, come here. We'll be your friend. We're so funny.
Do you get into philosophical debates with some of the other comics about?
Oh God, no, I don't. I'm too dumb for that. I just don't. They try. And I'm like, look, I'm going to remind you right now. This is stupid. You're stupid. I'm stupid. This is dumb. So that's my philosophy.
Uh-huh,
I'm like, we're dumb. You're dumb. This is dumb.
It's actually very grounded.
It is. Because it's true. Yeah. It's just anytime, I don't know. That was the other thing when I went to LA. Uh-huh. This guy who I started talking to him, met at the Comedy Store. We randomly got on a talk about meditation and things like that. And, you know, I see my therapist and she's like a big, you know, pro meditation. Yeah. And I'm really bad at meditation because, like I told you earlier, I'm a person who tries to fit a lot in one day. Yeah. And so it's like, oh, and I need to fit in breathing? I thought I was already doing that. So I was talking to him about it, and he was like, it was such an LA experience. He was like, you've got to read this book. You've got to read this book. It's called The Untethered Soul. And I was like, uh-oh, what's this one about? And he's like, it's about how you're not your thoughts. And you're gonna die. And I was like, perfect. Sounds like a good book. I'm gonna read it. He was like, no, but seriously, all the successful people read this book. And I was like, okay, I'll buy it because I'm dumb. And I bought it and I started reading it. And literally it's great, but it's like, okay, I'm not my thoughts. And then immediately I'm like, I'm such an asshole. Anyway, that's. I veered off again. I'm like, where do we start? I guess my point being, like, the philosophy thing, I'm just like, I don't know if I have one. I just kind of cross my fingers, walk into a room, and hope it goes okay. Yeah. Like, I just never, you know, I don't know. But anyway, I'm working on being more centered.
Do you set goals for yourself?
Yeah, I do. I do. I have some that, you know, I got to fulfill this year, which I'm really thankful. I have a lot of gratitude. Mm-hmm. You know, I had always said, like, my goal after last FPIA was to host for Cap City. Mm-hmm. And then it happened. Yeah. And the shows went great, you know, better than I could have imagined, at least, because I was thinking, like, I'd go up there and there'd be crickets. But, I mean, and it's not that I killed, because you really can as a host. But I did much better than I had in my head that I was going to do. So that was one I got to fill. There's still a couple others on the list that I'm hoping I can, you know, get to this year. Just because I'm getting old. I'm getting up there. they're getting ready to send me off to the farm. So I gotta step up my game. But God, people are gonna listen to this and be like, she is so negative. Is she okay? We thought she was fine.
I know. I'm like, I'm so used to Ashley being really positive. What have I done as an interviewer to bring this out in
you? No, you've just seen the surface level open mic. Now we're getting into it. It's like, I haven't even made my bed today, and that's a sign that I'm ready to, I'm ready to jump. No, I'm kidding.
Oh, man.
I'm just kidding, everyone. I'm fine.
This is the first, what do you call those? The alerts?
Right.
You have to put on somebody.
I know. Someone's going to.
Comedy Wham first.
Right. Like, I'm going to get.
Suicide watch.
There's going to be an ambulance guy who knocks in the door, like, and is like, I heard you were attempting. I don't know. And I'm like, what? I'm sitting on TV watching Keeping Up with the Kardashians, and I can see how you would think that's attempting, but I'm fine, sir. I'm fine. Oh, man. Uh-oh. Hope Mom doesn't listen to this, and she will be worried.
Mom, so she's fine. She's going to be fine.
Just making jokes.
You do host, co-host, Kick Butt Open Mic, and...
God, I can't get away from that place.
Well, you know...
I love it, though.
Somebody hosted it before you, and somebody will host it after you. Turnt?
Yes.
So that's a showcase that you host.
Mm-hmm. And with Derek Copswell. Mm-hmm.
You can't seem to escape him, because he's your co-host for Kick Butt.
Oh, but he's a great co-host. God, I'm, like, very thankful for him, because I'm a person who gets distracted. I'm always busy. And he's always right there to be like, don't worry, I got the lineup. Don't worry, I got the line. And it's great. Like, I very much appreciate him, because I'm a person who's just very like, oh, I got to do this. But wait, is that a butterfly? Like, I just can't. It's hard for me to focus. So he's a great co-host. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's not like if I have someone in mind that I've been watching that I think should be on the show or whatever,
yeah,
you know, I'll tell him and he'll be like, okay, cool. If we have room that month, they'll put that person, yeah, we'll put that person on that month. Or if we don't, we'll save for next month. But like, so it's not like he's, you know, solely like not taking, you know, it's just, I always get so busy and he's just right there though to be like, don't uh-huh. worry, I've got it.
Yeah.
You know,
so. Well, that's kind of what you want with a co-host, is a good partnership.
Yes. There's always one. I think in most co-host partnerships, mm-hmm. there's always one that does the work. And then there's one that's like, I'm just here to be another voice mm-hmm. and be another, you know, your other person to bounce
yeah.
whatever off of. But, yeah. So it's good. You know, start out slow. Yeah. We're slowly picking up here and there, mm-hmm. getting more audience members. So it's fun. It's a good show.
Are there other shows that you'd like to host or that you'd like to create? Is that something that seems...
You know, this is going to sound bad. But I am not the biggest fan of starting a show.
Mm.
Or I'm great at hosting. Like, yeah. I love to host.
Yeah.
But I would want to host someone else's show, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
They're the ones who came up with it. And I'm not a producer mind, so I need a producer behind me, essentially.
Yeah.
Like, because I'm not going to be the person who – I mean, I'm creative, but, like, not in that way. Mm-hmm. Like, not in a way that takes organization to pull it off.
Right.
So, but, I mean, I feel that I have the hosting ability. Mm-hmm. It's just I have to have someone who's – producing it behind me.
Yeah.
So, I would say, like, the only way I would have another show or host anything else is if someone was like, hey, I want to start this show and I want you to be the host. Mm-hmm. Like, they're the ones behind it and then they just want me to be the face, essentially.
Right.
So that's kind of, yeah. I know it's so bad.
It doesn't sound bad. It's I knowing your strengths.
Yeah.
No, because yeah. What if you forced yourself to do it and mm-hmm. then it was something you hated?
Right. Which it would be because yeah. it takes so much organization and detail yeah. that I just like am a person that cannot yeah. give, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I just, I mean, I would love to obviously host Cap again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's so funny and I'm sure every comic does this, but like they'll see who's coming to Cap,
mm-hmm.
You know, the next few whatever months.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you're just like, oh, I would be really good with her. Yeah. Or, you know, like, oh man, we're like the same person.
Yeah,
we should
yeah.
just have us a blah, blah, blah. You yeah. know, it's, I'm sure everyone does that, but you know, so that's like the, but I think my big dream, like if the stars were aligned and everything happened the way you wanted it to happen, which it doesn't, I think my big goal, my big dream would be to be like a host of a late night show eventually, like,
yeah.
And I'm not saying – I'm really hoping I'm not the first woman because that'll be a long time from now. Like, I'm hoping there's someone else.
Mm-hmm.
But essentially, like, another one, that would be amazing. Yeah. That would be the dream because I do like hosting and I like talking to people
mm-hmm.
Who are much more interesting than me. So it's fun because they're – I can't tell you how many people I talk to where I'm like, wow, that is a different life from mine, and I want to know more. Mm-hmm. And it's not even like they're convincing yeah. you to also live that life. Right. It's just like...
It's fascinating.
Yeah.
And this is why I do this.
Exactly. Yeah. It's fun to hear, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, my life's very boring other than I do comedy. Very just, you know, my boyfriend comes home and I'm like, you want to go see a movie? That's pretty... It's just... That's what it is. We live a very straight, just boring, you know? Anyway...
Let's see. And another question in the comedy realm, and then we're going to start wrapping up is, do you go after festivals?
I do. Yeah. I did Hell Yes Fest a few years ago. Mm-hmm. And then, I'm trying to think. I did Hell Yes Fest. And then when I was in LA, I did Burbank Comedy Festival. I think both suckered me in and I fell for it. But festivals, regardless of that, they are fun. They yeah. can be fun. The shows can be shit. And you're like, why did I give them $25 yeah. for me to come out here and tank? But then you meet really cool people from all over the country yeah. who are trying to do the same thing you're doing. And that part's fun, you know? But I think this upcoming year, I don't know if I'm going to get to do one or even which one I should do, because I kind of want to hone in more on festivals, which are a long shot of me ever getting in, because you have to have just the right tape.
Yeah.
And it's very competitive, and it's because they're the festivals that have industry there.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I'm going to hone in on more of those festivals. But again, like, it's, you know, one in a million shot, because it's you and literally a million other people. And it's just like, do I have that video yet that can stick out? No, I don't. Not yet, you know. But anyway, I probably submit to maybe one or two here or there. So we'll just have to see.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think it's great to have an awareness of like what you want to work on and what you want to focus on so that you can basically have the best chance.
Right.
At what you really want.
Right. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Which is, bigger breasts. That's why I do this. I just need big boobs.
Do you have some toilet paper?
Right. Exactly. That's what I mean. That's everyone, pay me in toilet paper. I do not need drink tickets. Pay me in toilet paper. I need them for both bathroom and my boobs. So please, please, please.
Oh my goodness. Is there anything that we haven't covered that you want to talk about?
I don't think so. Okay. Just that this is, I think we've covered it all. I mean, comedy takes up my life. I barely sleep. So if anyone was listening to this and they were thinking about getting into it, do it if you don't care about sleep. Definitely. But yeah, I don't think.
Okay.
Yeah. I think we covered it.
Ready for your final question?
I'm ready.
One word to describe your future.
Whoa. Oh, God. This is a tough one. Okay, so I have a joke answer.
Okay.
And then I have a true answer. Joke answer, money. Real answer, hope, probably. So, because I'm running for president.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, no.
Awesome. 2020 or?
Yeah, sure. No one's ever heard of me. Awesome. It'll be fun. That's kind of, you know, I don't have any money. So this will be, I'll be the first broke president. Running for office. Like, look, I've literally never held office. I have $20 in my bank account. Vote for me, Ashley Overton. 2020.
We'd vote for you.
A few people. Those weirdos who are like, I don't like anybody on this list. I'm going to go with Ashley. Yeah.
She seems nice.
Yeah.
She dresses nice, too.
I could have a beer with her. That's like how I've heard so many people be like, I vote for the person I think I could have a beer with. And I'm like, don't do that for our country. What? Stop. Leave.
Well, that is a wrap on Comedy Wham Presents Ashley Overton. Ashley, tell us where we can find you on social media and upcoming shows.
Okay, so I've got my Instagram, which is Champagne Pasta. It's my pride and joy because it is a parody off of Drake's Instagram, Champagne Poppy.
Ah.
And I can't tell you how many times I get DM'd by very attractive women who think it's Drake.
Oh, wow.
But it's not. It's the best. And then on Twitter, I need to be more active on that, but it's at Ashley Overton 1. And then on Facebook, just look me up at Ashley Overton. And that's me. And then upcoming shows. Well, I guess when is this going to be
this
airing?
This may be coming out after the new year.
After the new year. Okay. Well, no shows.
Oh, no.
Not yet.
Well, there's a couple weeks for you to get you know, super booked up.
And fingers crossed. You know, maybe this will help. They'll hear it. They'll be like, what? Yeah. No one's booked Ashley this month? Get her on. So, yeah, that's what I've got.
All right. Fantastic. Well, you've got the kick butt and you've got turned.
Oh, yeah. I guess. Oh, my God. I'm such an asshole. This is why I can't have a show. Because I don't even. Oh, that's right. Okay. Turn every second Monday of the month at Kick Butt Coffee, 9 o'clock. Come out and see how terrible of a person I am. for not.
She's not
rooting on my own show.
We just need to make sure Derek doesn't listen to this.
He won't. He's too busy playing video games. Love you, Derek.
We hope you've enjoyed learning about how Ashley got to be the grounded and hilarious comedic genius that you heard today, just as much as I have. Be sure to visit ComedyWham.com. Give us a follow on Twitter and Instagram at ComedyWham and like our Facebook page. You can listen to past interviews on iTunes or your favorite podcast player and review us while you're at it. This has been Comedy Wham Presents Ashley Overton. I'm Valerie, and that's been funny. Thank you, Ashley.
Thank you.